to open with a public hearing on Senate Bill 927. And we'll ask the staff to introduce the bill.
Thank you, Senator. Senate Bill 927 creates the Senior Prescription Drug Assistance Program to assist low-income Oregonians age 65 and older with prescription drug purchases. Requires a program to reimburse pharmacies for prescription drugs, to be responsible for participants to be responsible for a copay for drug purchases. Authorize the Governor's Commission on Senior Services to advise on the program. Discontinues the program if a comparable federal program is established, and appropriates money from the general fund to the program. Declares an emergency effective July 1, 2001. As some background, approximately 13% of Oregon's 3.4 million people are age 65 and older. And most people who are that age are recipients of Medicare, which covers some but not all Medicare costs and do not cover most prescription drugs. Many Medicare beneficiaries purchase additional insurance coverage, usually through a third party for drug purchases. An AARP report noted that two-thirds of Medicare beneficiaries had some sort of drug coverage from another source. However, over half of these beneficiaries spend $500 or more out of pocket on drugs every year, and 42% spend $1,000 or more out of pocket per year. The report noted that on average, poor beneficiaries, those with low incomes, below poverty, spend 9% of their income on prescription drugs. SDSD, the Senior Disabled Services Division, reports that about 4,300 Medicare recipients aged 65 and over received some partial assistance with Part B premiums. Only about 625 of these people received limited Medicaid benefits, which pay for prescription drugs. SDSD projects that approximately 106,000 people will be eligible for the program, and more may be eligible if they drop third-party coverage for this program. And the program is based on 185% federal poverty level, which comes to $15,890 for a single individual per year and $21,489 for a couple.
Thank you. I'm called Tom Holt from Oregon State Pharmacists Association and Jim Davis from Oregon State Council of Senior Citizens. Okay.
It's Jim. Senator Fisher?
Yes.
While they're coming, I just I have two students with me today. One happens to be my granddaughter, who's a student at St. Mary's School and is visiting with us during spring vacation. And the other one is a young woman who's at Cleveland High School, who has been honor student all of her life. And her name is Jackie LeSueur. So we'd like to welcome those to the legislative process.
Thank you, Senator Carter. And I had the privilege of making their acquaintance earlier this morning. So. Welcome to the hearing. I hope you don't get too bored. You may love going back to school at the end of this vacation. Go ahead.
Chair Fisher and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tom Holt. I'm Executive Director of the Oregon State Pharmacists Association. Our members practice in all the pharmacy practice settings, community pharmacies that you're probably most familiar with, health systems, mail order, and senior care and other pharmacy settings. I'll just briefly summarize my testimony. This bill addresses a very real concern, and that's the cost of drugs for uninsured seniors. One of the biggest problems that there is in pharmaceutical care is lack of compliance with drug therapy. One of the bigger reasons for lack of compliance among seniors is the expense when they don't have insurance, and that can lead to rather high costs as a result of not taking the right drug. So the fact that the bill is means tested and includes participation from the participants we think are good steps to take in a program such as this. We do have amendments pending in Legislative Council. Unfortunately, they have not emerged yet. And what I'd like to do is just briefly summarize for you what in concept what those are. First relates to the payment rate. The bill is drafted, ties the rate to the Medicaid rate, which, as all of you know, may fluctuate in the future, and so we suggest tying that to the rate in effect as of the first of this year. Secondly, we would like to see the participants select a primary care pharmacy so that we have a medication record residing at one pharmacy so the pharmacist can see all of the drugs that patient is on and thereby prevent adverse drug-drug events that can be deadly. And there's a bill on the House side that we've suggested be used as the language to adapt for that, House Bill 3311 from Representative Cheryl Walker. And thirdly, to add a case management piece to the bill so that we focus on, at the pharmacy level, those people who have multiple medications and chronic conditions that are high cost, and to ensure that people are getting the right drugs or the right drug in the right dose and that they're compliant with their therapy. And we would envision that as primarily being written reports to the prescriber, and then they would follow up with that. This is an approach that's worked in other states, in other types of populations where it's been tried, and it would be one way to ensure that the costs remain reasonable in the program by primarily achieving better health outcomes. And last, we had some suggestions about the advisory group that oversees the program, that we'd like to see more healthcare professionals involved in that. And that's what the amendments will look like when they come back. Unfortunately, we don't have those today. But we think that with those pieces added, it would significantly improve the bill, and we'd be delighted to support it with those added. And that concludes my testimony.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator.
I just have to say something to Tom. Tom, you just rubbed my feathers. I don't know whether other people in our age group that are 65 and over get upset about this, but I already have to have a primary doc. Mm-hmm. And now you're going to tell me I need a primary pharmacist? I can't buy my medication where I want to buy it? I mean, let my doctor manage my medication so it won't be, you know, so we won't be getting medication here, there, and everywhere. I think that's a little personal.
Chair Fisher and Senator Carter, our intent there is not to have someone else tell you which pharmacy to use, but to allow an enrollee to select a pharmacy they would use and commit to using that pharmacy so that we could prevent there being any adverse events happen. Sometimes we've had, in fact, some very bad events happen where people have gone and gotten one drug at one pharmacy and a second drug at another pharmacy, and neither one has access to the whole record in terms of the medication, and that can be a very big problem.
Mr. Chairman, Tom, I understand it's very laudable, and I think it's a good way to be able to do that. But I think that we're going to be so locked in this society by everybody being primary whatever, and it just irritates me that we are now going from now having a primary doc to having a primary pharmacist. In another world, you know, it might be good. But I don't want you to make me, you're going to primary me out here.
I guess Senator Carter hadn't been over 65 long enough to get my feathers ruffled.
I was in shock because I didn't know you were 65.
We have Jim, could I ask you just to let Senator Minnis, he needs to get back to his Judiciary Committee. I don't want him making a bunch of laws up there for us that we don't understand without him being there. So let him get in here. And thank you. We'll get right back to you momentarily.
Go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon, Senator. Chairman, members of the Senate Health and Human Resources Committee, I want to make sure I'm
whatever we are.
We haven't changed our name.
Be politically correct.
The innocent. What, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senate Bill 927 is a bill that I introduced for a number of reasons. And let me first state what the perceived problem is and what I believe the problem to be. Uninsured seniors are at the greatest risk for going without necessary medications as they consume about one-third of all prescriptions written within the United States. Among the United States and Oregon, Medicare recipients, over one-third lack prescription medication coverage. The remainder, two-thirds, have prescription drug coverage provided through either a former employer or Medicare Medicaid insurance programs. However, this coverage is expensive, has high deductibles, requires oftentimes 50% co-payments, and has strict annual limitations in terms of its coverage. The rising cost of prescription drugs has put needed medicine out of the reach of many older Americans. Many seniors have to decide between purchasing medications that they need to stay healthy and other necessary items such as food and shelter. Now, that particular line may ring in many of your hearts and minds because it was one that many of us heard during the political campaign season. The solution to the problem is something that I've drafted in terms of Senate Bill 927. What this program attempts to do is to provide for senior citizens who have a gross annual income of not more than 185% of the federal poverty level and are not covered under any current prescription medication plan, a benefit program that would provide benefits for a certain pharmaceutical medication. It provides reimbursement to pharmacies in the same manner and for the same prescription drugs covered by the Oregon Health Plan. It requires a $15 copay for generic drugs and a $30 copay for non-generic drugs. The maximum out-of-pocket cost per enrollee would be $2,000 a year, and after meeting that contribution, the participants would not be responsible for additional copayments. This whole bill really was just a schematic diagram of what I thought some kind of prescription medication reimbursement program should be, which audiences within Oregon's population are those that are very vulnerable and need some kind of assistance in this area. Interestingly, during the campaign season, when this issue popped its head up, having served some seven terms in the Oregon legislature, it was interesting to me that I did not recall voting on one piece of legislation that dealt with prescription reimbursement to anyone. However, in some research, I found that there was one piece of legislation I voted on many years ago that would have simply set a particular kind of price standard for purchasing medications from retail outlets. And it occurred to me that 42%, no, it didn't occur to me, actually, the benchmark survey that we did in our political campaign showed that Senate District 11 has 42% of its voting population are senior citizens over age 65. Which was a phenomenal number for me, because having served in that area for about 15 years now, that demographic has changed dramatically. Senior populations are growing, and there are individuals who I believe deserve some form of respect for the contributions that they have made to our culture and our society over the years that they've contributed through their employment, businesses, and otherwise. So I think that this is a good time and a good place in Oregon's history to begin to look at some form of pharmaceutical reimbursement program for senior citizens. I do also have the -1 amendments available for the committee, by the way. These are the amendments that Mr. Holt was referring to earlier, dealing with the pharmaceutical management program. And I personally would suggest that the committee take a serious look at this, because I do believe, notwithstanding Senator Carter's comments, that this has some merit in terms of trying to coordinate the various costs that individuals enrolling in the program would be facing. So with that, I'll answer any questions that I think I might be competent to defer any of those that I'm not to whomever else might be willing.
Senator Shields.
Yes, Senator Minnis, I realize that others may have a more complete answer, but as you thought about this, how big a demographic across the state do you think we're going to be talking about, and what will the cost of that be, do you think?
The rough estimate that I have right now from LFO in terms of the demographic group is approximately 35,000 senior citizens in Oregon fit this category who do not have any kind of prescription medication reimbursement program. Let me see. The figure that the Oregon Health Plan provided with respect to pharmaceutical reimbursements that they're currently doing for their population was approximately $286, and it was approximately $286.62 on average across the board. When we took in the other assumptions about this target audience, the ultimate outside cost, and this was assumed to be on the high side, was about $11 million.
About what?
$11 million.
It's no problem for some of us Democrats. I was just wondering, you know, why your bill was all Republicans. Didn't you want our support, you know? And well, just giving you a hard time, John.
No, actually, you perceive correctly.
you don't want our help.
Fact.
You don't want our help.
No, actually, I can say this kind of tongue-in-cheek. The Senate rules allow for additional memberships and sponsorships at any time that the motions make on the floor. I would certainly support that. But I guess to some extent, you know, I have to give credit to those individuals who targeted some of us during the campaigns.
I like your honesty, Senator.
With respect to this issue, but it was interesting to me that after serving so many years in this legislature, we had not really spent a lot of time dealing with the issue. And I think I remember sitting around with the people that sit in my kitchen cabinet in my political campaign, and when we got our benchmark survey results back with the senior population, 42% was huge. It was huge, and it was. I remember all of us sitting around, kind of. Did you realize it was that big? And on all of the races that we've run before in that outer Multnomah County area, it's never been that large. So for whatever reason, that demographic group is growing. And just so you know, kind of a little aside, there are about 68,000 people in the United States today that are over 100 years of age, and that demographic group is growing nationally. And I'm hoping to reach that golden age.
Mr. Chair,
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, Senator Minnis, I want to correct your statement, I think, or maybe it didn't make it this strongly, but Brookings Harbor has the highest percentage of retired people in the state of Oregon. But more important, I wanted to ask you if you've had a chance to review Senate Bill 9, which is going to be heard here shortly. I'm concerned there might be some overlap between the two bills, only it is a free program or drastically reduced program. Have you reviewed the bill?
I haven't reviewed it in total. I mean, I do know that it in essence provides a basic health care coverage plan and takes out a number of current mandates that exist in Oregon statute. I'm also a signer on that bill. My understanding is that these two bills should complement each other. I'll have to leave it up to individuals like yourself to help mesh those things together. So the intent is not to conflict with each other, but both to complement each other.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. I appreciate the time.
Jim, would you be willing to wait? We've got a couple of folks from the House over here also, and Representative Walker and Representative Bates, would you come and try to get you back to your respective committees as soon as possible?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We just got pulled off the floor. We were still in floor session.
In that case, I did you a favor.
had to call the floor, so you couldn't have got us out anyway.
Yes.
But thanks for trying. I appreciate it.
Yes, thank you, Senator. My name is Vicki Walker. I'm State Representative for House District 41, representing Eugene, Springfield, and Coburg. And I'm absolutely delighted to learn that my colleagues in the Senate have a bill that's remarkably similar to my own in many ways and remarkably different in many ways. And so I'm having the assistant pass out to you my House Bill 3774 and the legislative fiscal that was done on that in January, which I'm still waiting for an update on that fiscal impact. The difference between Senate Bill 927 and my bill 3774 is that the first significant difference is that my program limits it to seniors who are not more than 135% of the federal poverty level. As you can see, this one is Senate Bill 927 is 185%. It also does not offer graduated treatment under the program as my bill does, which I think lessens the fiscal impact. I was surprised to hear Senator Minnis estimate his fiscal was only $11 million because that's actually what mine was shown to be, and I know that my bill had probably less of an impact. But we are both still waiting a new fiscal from LFO. I called them on Friday. They said it wouldn't be ready today for either bill. So I imagine they're quite busy down there. This program does not provide a direct cash refund, which my bill does, which may make it a little more difficult to work with. I'm not sure. It depends on what road you want to go down. But I just want to say that I'm very pleased that we're all in a bipartisan manner looking at bringing pharmacy assistance to our seniors. And the LFO will show you that the average cost of drugs among Oregon seniors is $287 a year, but I can tell you that my own father-in-law in 1999 spent nearly $3,000. I have not yet done his 2000 taxes, so I don't know what the amount will be, but I suspect it will be more. And there are a lot of chronic illnesses that cause high costs for people, such as diabetes, which is an increasing disease for a number of Americans and Oregonians in particular. This bill really speaks to the problems we have in delivering services and benefits, as you can see by Section 2, Paragraph 3, where the senator requests that the department assist applicants in applying for public assistance programs. This is one of the areas of interest I have, is that I have discovered in talking with LFO and seniors themselves, and Representative Bates can back me up on this, is the programs that we have available for our seniors are very complex and convoluted. It's very hard for them to access. It's hard for us to put them in the right program. There's an OSIP standard, the Medically Needy Program. There's Medicare, Medicaid, private insurance. Where do these people go? It's very, very difficult. And so one of the things that I liked about Senate Bill 927 is it at least speaks to trying to find a program for these people, though not directly. I think that's something that we can increase our work on. We had a forum this weekend in Eugene, in Springfield, actually, and some of the seniors said to me that they were having a very difficult time with the spend down provisions and trying to get coverage for their drugs. So that is one area that I hope that we spend a little bit of time trying to increase some efficiencies in the system. And then Representative Bates would like to address some of the issues on the flip side of the bill regarding the co-payments and the other programs that are listed.
Thank you, Senator Fisher, and fellow members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me to speak today. I'm coming off the floor. For the record, I'm Alan Bates, representative from District 52, which is in Southern Oregon, and I'm a physician. And I would like to comment on a few things about these bills before you, as primarily as a physician, more than as a representative. First, I would tell you that something you probably already know, there are certain members of our senior community who are truly suffering from the high cost of pharmaceuticals. These are primarily people with chronic illnesses, diabetes, congestive heart failure. These are illnesses that require long-term and expensive medications. And while the overall average for seniors is not as high as one might think, being $230 or $40, for the individuals targeted with these chronic illnesses, they can easily be spending $3,000 to $4,000 a year in medication bills. And these medications keep them alive. And frankly, in the last several weeks, I've had to hospitalize two patients who end up in the hospital strictly because they could not afford their medications and stopped taking them. End up in the hospital bills of $10,000 to $15,000 for hospitalization when, in fact, if they'd taken their medications, they wouldn't have been there at all. For those reasons, I frankly like these bills you've brought forward very much. Senate Bill 927, House Bill 3774, and I haven't had a chance to see Senate Bill 9. All, to me, have great promise. I'd like to make a few comments about them, and I do this in all respect, because I'll make these comments as a physician primarily and someone who works daily with these people. As far as co-pays are concerned, if you wish to place in the bill the exact co-pays, which I'd have no objection to, I would suggest strongly that you put those co-pays in by how long, with the length of time the prescription is. A co-pay for a prescription is kind of a meaningless term. Many of the co-pays that people pay for their prescriptions now are not just for 1 month, as one might assume. For long-term prescriptions, they usually are for 3 months at a time. So if you say the copay is such and such, you need to put a time limit in there also. You also should know that most generic drugs nowadays cost about $15 or $20 per month's prescription. So you may want to change your generic copay to something lower because you wouldn't be giving much relief to people who are buying generic drugs. Also, generic drugs, unless you buy a lot of them, are not a huge burden for people. The other part of the copay, of course, relates to non-generic drugs, and these are where the high expensive drugs are. Drugs will commonly cost $100 to $150 a month per drug for the patient. It doesn't take many of those to run up a bill that is the type we've talked about. I would ask you that you would consider a copay for those on a 90-day basis of $30 to $40 to $50 of that range to give some real relief to these people. That might change your fiscal impact also. Secondly, you've suggested an oversight committee for this. I would like to have you at least consider using the Health Resources Commission as an oversight committee. The Health Resources Commission has pharmacists, physicians, and consumers on it, and are used to working with these kinds of issues and may bring the expertise you need as this bill becomes implemented, if it were to become a law. Thirdly, I would like to have you look at Section 5, Line 17, which says this bill would be discontinued if a federal program became available. I think this bill has real potential for doing a lot of good for the people in Oregon. I'd hate to see it discontinued on the basis that a bill comes from the federal government that we might or might not like. And if you could put language in there that would say discontinued, combined, or at least be reconsidered, I think it'd be very appropriate so we don't automatically lose this if something comes from the federals. The last issue is eligibility. That is always a difficult issue for any type of program like this. You know, you can make $1 too much and you get nothing, and that always concerns me in a phase in of eligibility. And I would suggest clear of 200% of the federal poverty level, I think would be appropriate. I have many patients who clearly at 200% of the poverty level, but still have a great deal of difficulty if their drug bills would get high enough. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Senator Shue.
Yes, Representative Bates, you just brought something to my mind that I'd not thought about. As you know, when we sit in Ways and Means Sub on Human Services, we're always looking at budgets and saying, now, will this $5 million cut end up costing us $10 million? And I hadn't thought of it until you mentioned that sometimes if people don't get their medications, they end up in hospitals. What about, have you given any thought to the really low-income people whose hospital stays end up being paid by the state, and the fact that we might actually be spending money here that'll save a significant amount of money to the taxpayers? And do you have any idea, just even a wild guess as to how much that might be? I mean, because you're talking, well, if you take Senator Minnis's figure, $11 million, but if we're saving half of that by people not going to hospitals unnecessarily, we may be talking about a different financial figure altogether.
Mr. Chair and Senator Shields, an absolutely excellent point. When we admit people to hospitals, we admit them under diagnosis codes, and those codes do not show that they're there because they have not taken their medication. Patients, the two, I can give you an example, the two I did over the weekend. One was an individual who had ran out of insulin 3 days before admission and decided to stop taking it because he couldn't afford it. Came with a blood sugar of 500 or 600, okay? He spent 3 days in the hospital, and we probably spent $10,000 or $15,000 bringing him back. And we had a congestive heart failure patient who did the same thing. She will be in for a week. We can't, as I know it now, we can't track those costs, but your point is excellent. It wouldn't take many cases like that across the state to easily make up an $11 million bill, if that, in fact, is what the bill is. We have argued as physicians for years that denying patients medications due to cost actually encourages them not to take them, and it ends up costing the system more money. It's hard to prove.
Well, just a follow-up, Mr. Chair, and that is your own system of coding keeps you from coming up with these statistics, but the anecdotal stuff that you just gave us, one guy, his prescription for a year is, say, how much?
I would expect it's $200 or $300.
Two.
Senator Fisher and Senator Shields, I would expect $200 or $300.
So you got a guy with a prescription of $200 or $300 that just cost $15,000 because he couldn't afford that. And did the state pick up any of that? Would the state, because he's low income or anything, or through the health plan or anywhere, pick up any of that?
Senator Fisher and Senator Shields, he was uninsured. The hospital will pick up the cost, which will then be cost-shifted to the state and to the commercial products.
There you go.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator. We appreciate your time, and you'll notice that mine is a bipartisan bill, and I do hope that we can work together on this issue, because I think we all care about providing some assistance to our seniors. So hopefully with a number of these prescription drug bills, we can blend them together and come out with some really good legislation that benefits our folks.
Thank you.
Mr.
Chairman, we had our corny senator that's on this committee talking about defibrillators this morning. But I have to tell you, I have to publicly thank the senator from my having to go home, our representative doctor from having to go home because of a swollen knee. Publicly, thank.
You're welcome. Thank you very much. And we do have defibrillators in the building now.
That's right.
Yeah, we got them in.
Jim, we get back to you. Thank you for being patient.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Jim Davis, representing the Oregon State Council of Senior Citizens and the United Seniors of Oregon. We strongly support the concept brought out in Senate Bill 927, and we greatly appreciate the leadership shown by the Oregon State Pharmacists Association and Representative and Senator Minnis and the Republican leadership in supporting a concept of establishment of a senior prescription drug program. There really is a great need out in the community, in our senior community, for the establishment of such a program, especially for those seniors who don't have a Medicare Plus Choice type of coverage or who might not qualify for Medicaid and receive coverage in that particular situation. The point brought out by OSPA, the OSPA director, is an excellent one, is that one of the primary areas in terms of lack of compliance is the fact that people simply don't have the money or the coverage to be able to purchase the drugs that they need, and thus they get sicker, and the system ends up paying a lot more money because of that. And so we would ultimately, nobody's ever really done the study that they probably should on this, but if people are getting the drugs that they need, ultimately it does cut down on other health care costs that usually shift over into hospitalizations, emergency room visits, physician visits, things such as that. So compliance is a very important issue for us. And the issue around choices and the fact that there are very few choices for seniors around drug benefits and that this is very much needed. 30% of all prescription drugs that are purchased in America are purchased by seniors. And so they are a third of the market, and yet what is shocking is that a lot of the seniors who need drugs are not receiving them. So that figure could be even higher. We appreciate the tie into case management because we would want to see it tied into a case management system, particularly within senior and disability services system. We would want to make sure that the form that seniors are filling out is simple and doesn't cause any real complications. So these are things that need to be taken into account. We appreciate the fact that the Governor's Commission on Senior Services would be the advisor. I have been involved with them for 12 years on mental health and alcohol and drug issues, and they are a leader in that area and would provide very, very sound advice. Some hesitations that we might just bring out, and that's why you see this line over to neutral, and that is the fact that our advocates have always had hesitancies around copayments for lower-income people. And yet, in this case, we understand why this would be necessitated. I would look at the $30 for non-generic drugs and say maybe that's a little high, since some senior, although we strongly support the use of generic drugs as a first option, if that is the most effective drug for seniors to take, a lot of seniors are not able to take the generic drug, and $30 can add up. And so on the copayment area, we'd like you to take a look at that potentially and talk about that. The issue raised by Senator Carter, I think, is an excellent one, too. We don't mind having someone stay with a certain physician for a certain amount of time. We think that is probably the best way to do it. You can keep a good profile, and we are moving towards support of that type of emphasis, but we would want to make sure that there's adequate opportunities to switch pharmacists if the senior wanted to do so. The one last area that probably will come out in other people testifying, and that is the price tag. We've heard $11 million, but we've heard a lot higher prices as well. And the one concern we have at this point, of course, is with the tremendous cuts in senior and disability services. Our first priority, of course, is getting that continuing level budget put back into the budget. And with continuing service levels for senior and disabilities services, then we certainly would strongly support money being put towards a pharmaceutical program for seniors. And we would be glad to cooperate with you on any kind of consensus legislation that you might want to put together. And we appreciate your efforts on this.
Jim, I want you to know, Democrats do support senior services when it comes to prescription drugs.
Oh, I know that.
Giving you a hard time.
Very strongly.
I thought it was quite interesting in terms of the primary pharmaceutical pharmacies.
Right.
And I don't mean that as a total negative. I want you to understand that too, Tom. But I do think that when you start talking about managed care systems, that we see some of our managed care systems not working as well as they should right now, and to start putting a managed care approach to the pharmacy, please, I think locks people in. And I want to have choice, and that's the independence of me, and I think there are a lot of others who reflect that. So that point being said, do you share the notion, Senator, Menace's statement that 42% of the $3.4 million people in Oregon are 65 and over. That's 42% of this.
Now say that again.
Of the 3.4 million people we have in Oregon, 42% of them are over 65.
No. No, that I don't know.
Oh, in his district.
Yeah,
I was going to make a point. My point was, boy, oh boy, with senior and disabled services being cut, we could have a hell of a rally on this. My mind was already gone to the next level because I said, I'm going to lead the charge on that one because I think all of you guys in the middle are doing us wrong.
Well, I believe, Mr. Chair and Senator Carter, I believe that the figure is more around 14% of the population is in the senior.
Get me straight, because I had a rally already planned for the governor and the legislature.
But in terms of the choice of pharmacists, that's been a big issue for us over the years, and we have strongly supported seniors and other consumers being able to choose the pharmacy that they want, particularly neighborhood pharmacies, because we feel that they have a very strong role. Right. We also want to make sure that seniors locks in, once they choose a pharmacy, they lock in for a certain time period with one pharmacist so they can keep adequate profiles, and you can work with that pharmacist, and that pharmacist understands the drugs you're taking so that there can be adequate medication management as well.
Mr. Chairman, you know, if we had quote-unquote ma and pa pharmacists in our communities today, I would feel comfortable with that. Mm. But we have chains, and people change too much in chains for me to want to maintain a relationship. If it's my ma and pa pharmacist, I would feel very comfortable because they're some of the best friends that seniors could have. But we don't have that. We have the big Fred Meyer chain, the big Safeway chain now in my community, the big Walgreens chain, and we don't have our pharmacists that we can talk to and have a personal relationship with. It's all about numbers. And how are you going to keep my number differentiated from somebody else's number? Scares the heck out of me.
And rightfully so, Mr. Chair and Senator Carter. That's why we would want flexibility to allow a senior to be able to pick the pharmacy that they want and change their pharmacy within reasonable time periods.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bruce Crawford and Dan Kaplan.
Right ahead. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Dan Kaplan of the Senior and Disabled Services Division, and with me is Hirsch Crawford of the Office of Medical Assistance Programs.
You guys here to puncture our balloon?
unfortunately, it seems to be the role this session. Jim Davis spoke a moment ago about various fiscal impact estimates that were out there, and our concern about this bill derives primarily from our fiscal impact estimate, which is much higher than the one that was previously mentioned. And so to cut to the chase, in looking at this bill and in analyzing its impacts, we estimated that the number of folks who would probably qualify is significantly higher than the 30-odd thousand number we heard before, more on line of 106,000. And that the cost of the drugs associated with services to this group of people would be on the order of $124 million. Obviously, working with 106,000 individuals would necessitate that someone, and we are, like Jim Davis, anticipating that DHS field system would have to have staffing to work with them. And our analysts estimate that 244 staff would be required to work with a population of 106,000 folks. And when we tote that all up, that gets us to a fiscal impact estimate of $166 million of general funds and $179 million of total funds. And that is really the root of our concern here. I guess as a secondary item, we have a concern that the bill as written doesn't appear to have a provision that would prevent or discourage seniors from dropping current prescription coverage if they have it. And that might also, of course, bring more people onto the system.
Senator Shields.
Yes, I don't think anybody wants to follow up after that.
Yeah.
That balloon that you just took a cannon to. Obviously, the question in my head is, how can we have such disparate estimates here? And could you maybe defend yours, since obviously Senator Minnis isn't here to defend his right now? I just want to see how you arrive at those numbers. Can you?
Absolutely. Hirsch Crawford will
defend that a minute.
Run through some of the assumptions and ours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Shields. For the record, I'm Hirsch Crawford, the administrator of the Office of Medical Assistance Programs. And what I can do is just briefly run through the assumptions that we have used in order to come down to our estimate of 106,000 people. We begin with an estimate that there are 450,000 people in Oregon who are over the age of 65. And from a recent survey, we are able to determine, it was a survey on insurance and uninsurance in Oregon. We know that there are approximately 28,000 people over 65 and under 185% of poverty who list themselves as uninsured. So I want to pull those people out for just a moment, because those are people who are totally uninsured. So if I subtract them from the 450,000, that leaves us with 422,000 people over the age of 65 in Oregon, the vast majority of whom are insured through Medicare, but who do not have drug coverage, as we have heard earlier. We used an estimate that 40% of people over the age of the we assume that 40% of the 422,000 do not have drug coverage, and that gets us down to 169,000 people. We assume that 55% of the 169,000 people have incomes under 185% of poverty, and that gets us down to 93,000 people. And then of those 93,000 people, we had assumed that 90% of them would actually participate in this program, because no matter how attractive a program is, not all of the people who are eligible for it participate. And that gets us down to 84,000 people. Now, I want to put that aside for just a second and then go back to the 28,000 that we took off the top a moment ago. We know that all of those people are over 65, and that all of them are uninsured, and that all of them have incomes under 185% of poverty. So all we need to do is take that 28,000 and multiply it by the 90% factor for those who will participate, like we did for the rest of our calculation. And that gives us another 25,000 people. So adding that 25,000 to the 84,000 that we came up with a moment ago gets us to 109,000 people. Now, we know that one of the requirements of Senate Bill 927 is that we do aggressive outreach and that we inform people who participate in the program about other programs that they might be eligible for. So we have assumed that 3,000 of the people who would be interested in this program would otherwise qualify for Medicaid and would qualify under the old age assistance program. So that leaves us with, in terms of a caseload impact, 106,000 people who would be covered for drugs only under this bill, and another 3,000 people that we would pick up on our traditional Medicaid program, where they would become eligible for the full spectrum of Medicaid services.
Mr. Chair, follow up?
Yes.
I wrote as fast and as well as I can, but would you mind putting that incredible formula, because it is a good one, on paper for us?
We'd be very glad to do that.
Yes. Thank you. That's an incredible, I think, well-articulated description of how you arrive at something like this. And if we have that in writing, then we can compare it with other people's methodologies and maybe get it at cost for this.
Mr. Chair, Senator Shields, I'd be glad to do that.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Mesa.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Crawford, as you know, I'm new to this game, and I'm just very curious, as you and other professionals that deal with this issue on a daily basis, if you have other better ways. I mean, this cost is probably a deal breaker, but do you have other ideas that you're bringing forth this session, or that maybe don't even need legislation, that we can provide better service to our seniors and to all users of prescription drugs?
Mr. Chair, Senator Messerly, the governor is not proposing any legislation this session that would specifically address access to pharmaceuticals for low-income seniors. The one bill that I am aware of that would, to some degree, increase access to pharmaceuticals for low-income seniors without shifting this kind of cost onto the state. I'm sorry, the number of the bill has slipped my mind at the moment.
Is it Senate Bill 876?
Thank you, Senator Carter. It's Senate Bill 876, which would require that low-income, that seniors, I guess it's not even low-income seniors, but seniors are able to purchase drugs from pharmacies at Medicaid rates, and that would lower costs somewhat to seniors.
Mr. Crawford, are you familiar with Senate Bill 9, which we're hearing today?
Mr. Chair, Senator Messerly, I'm not.
Thank you very much. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 927. And open a public hearing on SCR 8.
They can do that, Senator.
Senator Mesa, it's 9 that you want.
Nine, right.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Senator. SCR 8 recommends that health insurers, health care service contractors, the Oregon Health Plan, and other state-funded health care programs that provide prescription medicines to seniors establish and conduct medication management workshops and training, produce education materials on medication management, and take other means to educate the public about proper medication management. As people age, they have increasing health problems and need for ongoing and wider use of prescription drugs. There are nearly 10,000 medications available today compared to about 650 just 30 years ago. As a person may receive medications from more than one healthcare provider, that provider may not know or be aware that the patient is already taking prescribed drugs from another doctor or healthcare provider, and these drugs may act in an adverse condition when used together. There's also an increased problem with medication errors. An Institute of Medicine study noted that discrepancies between what patients are taking and what doctors prescribe is as high as 76%. Additionally, medications tend to lose their potency over time, and an individual may inadvertently be taking medications at a dosage that's ineffective. And other problems with advancing age, such as memory, vision loss, may lead to increasing problems reading labels, remembering when to take medications. As our population increases, there's going to be probably a tendency towards increased medication-related problems. Currently, the state does not have a comprehensive and coordinated program to address medication management.
Okay, I'd like to call Mary Slowoski and Jim Davis and Brad Fields. Mary is with Washington County ARP. Jim is with United Seniors and Oregon State Council of Senior Citizens, and Brad is with Legislative Assistant to Senator Crowell. Go ahead, Mary.
Good afternoon, Senator Fisher and members of the committee. My name is Mary Slowoski. I am a volunteer for AARP Oregon. We have over 440,000 members in the state of Oregon, and today I am here to, and I promise to speak briefly, in support of Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 8. Adverse reaction to prescription drugs is a serious problem among older Americans. I would like to share the following facts with this committee. In 1994, an estimated 106,000 Americans died, and another 1.3 million were injured as a result of adverse reactions to prescribed medications. A study by the U.S. General Accounting Office in 1995 found that 17% of hospitalized older Americans were admitted because of adverse drug reaction. This is six times greater than that of the rate of the general population. The Food and Drug Administration estimates that the cost of hospitalizations by inappropriate use of prescription medication is about $20 billion annually. The fact that consumers are not given enough information about the drugs being prescribed is a major contributor to the problem of medication misuse. An AARP study conducted in 1989 indicated that more than one-third of all patients are not being counseled by doctors on even the most basic aspects of their drug therapies. In my own case, I had in December of 99 and December of 2000, I had ear surgery. And it was, as I tell you here, it was to correct me having a lot of senior moments and deafness. Both times I was discharged from the hospital, I was given a bottle of Vicodin for pain, and I was told by the nurse that I had to take the pill before I left because I might have pain, which I told her I wasn't having pain, but take it anyway, you might have pain. Well, I didn't, and I didn't use any of the medication. I guess I have a high threshold for pain, but mostly, as I say here, I don't like taking pills. Consequently, I know nothing about this particular drug or other pain medications. I was not informed that this drug is highly and swiftly addictive, and some say it borders on what the addictive qualities of heroin. I learned from a television news item regarding the flagrant use of the drug that this is the current drug of choice among celebrities who we hear all the time now are being sent to rehab or volunteering to go to rehab to get over the effects of this one particular drug. Wow. While providing for a comprehensive and coordinated system of educational programs addressing medication management, communication among seniors, providers, and the professionals would ultimately improve. A medication management training for seniors would reduce the incidence of medication-related medical emergencies. It would help healthcare professionals, seniors, and providers alike to better understand about the responsible use of prescription medications and the potentially harmful effect of misuse or abuse of those medications. Such programs would ultimately result in savings costs that now occur due to hospitalization and consequent treatment. Passage of Senate Concurrent Resolution 8 would be the right thing to do, a step in the right direction towards correcting a very serious, costly problem.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jim Davis, representing the Oregon State Council of Senior Citizens, United Seniors of Oregon, and the Great Panthers. We join with the representatives of the pharmacy profession, including the Oregon Pharmacy Coalition and the Oregon State Pharmacists Association, in supporting SCR 8, which recommends the provision of medication management education for seniors and their health professionals and providers. This is our third attempt at actually putting this legislation before the Oregon legislature, and we certainly appreciate the attention that it is now being paid. There are no mandates in this legislation. Essentially what it is, it's a statement around the establishment of drug education programming that would include local workshops and presentations in your local communities, also such things as individual consultations with pharmacists, potentially community education through local print and electronic media, and other ways to provide education in the local communities. Our intent is to inform seniors and their service and care providers and health professionals about responsible use of prescription drugs and the potentially harmful effects of these drugs, and to begin a process of assisting in the improvement of communication with pharmacists and doctors alike. This community-based education really is our effort and a strong recommendation on our part to help prevent the abuse and misuse of prescription drugs among seniors. There are a number of examples of good, strong programs around the state. The Oregon State Council has a program known as the Oregon Senior Drug Education Program, which is an excellent example. There are others out there. The Oregon Medication Education Project, Dr. V. Mignot, will be up here in a bit. We'll talk about that. But through our efforts, what we have been able to do is reach thousands through workshops and presentations in the local communities around such issues as changes in drug actions, communicating with health professionals, self-management techniques, and community resources. We want to expand our efforts now to create an 800 number through the School of Pharmacy or other sources. I'll be back up to talk about that in the next piece of legislation, but also looking at bringing in pharmacists into the local senior centers or community centers, maybe have programs such as the Volunteer Lawyer Projects, where people could come in and have a chance to brown bag their drugs into the senior center and have a consultation on that. We look at the fact that the senior years are a time of chronic physical and emotional problems. 85% of seniors have some kind of chronic illness. So physicians are always searching for answers, and oftentimes those answers are in the form of medications, which are becoming more and more sophisticated. But as I stated earlier today, although the seniors are around 13-14% of the population, they represent 30-35% of the prescription drug market, and very similar proportion of over-the-counter drugs. And so there's a real growing concern around among geriatric professionals about the high level of drug usage and how it's dramatically increasing the chance of misuse and abuse of prescription drugs among our senior population. You heard the statistics given by AARP, and those are very true. Around 20-25% of all senior hospital admissions are drug related, and oftentimes there's other ways that things that are happening in the senior community where people don't even realize the very negative implications: trading medications, taking higher dosages than recommended, or if they don't have the money, taking lower dosages than recommended, and a lot of other things that seniors need to really have discussed with them. There's such a critical need for this education because the fact is the senior population is oftentimes universally uninformed about the harmful effects of these drugs and medications. And what's interesting is that oftentimes our health professionals and their service providers are also misinformed about the issue. So we want to see that education expanded out to their providers as well, because oftentimes they might not intervene in a problem because they don't understand that there's substance abuse or misuse taking place. We also feel that the whole concept of a strong drug utilization review program will save an enormous amount of money down the pike. We hear from a lot of people on the state level and other levels, oh, we've tried that and it doesn't work. But we firmly believe if you have a strong medication management program where pharmacists and other health professionals are working with our senior population, oftentimes what happens, they cut down on the number of drugs they're taking. They realize they don't necessarily need to be taking all the drugs they're taking, or the combinations they're taking them in are inappropriate. And so they start to cut back on the drugs that they're taking, and it becomes even more effective for their health situation. They end up not being hospitalized or not going to the doctor as many times. And so you don't see that cost shift. So you begin to see some real improvement on the financial side as well. So anyway, we feel that this is a statement that needs to be made not only to the Oregon Health Plan, but to private health plans, that this type of educational process is needed on a state level as well as on a private level. And we appreciate your support of SCR 8.
Hi, members of the committee, Senator Fisher. My name is Brad Fields. I'm a legislative assistant to Senator Cliff Trowe. I just came today to thank you from Senator Trowe for hearing this, and to apologize for him not being here. He's in committee, in fact. One thing I did want to mention, Senator Trowe sponsored some legislation in 97, also that was similar to this, and it's something that makes sense, and all the other folks that are here to testify will make that case. Another thing I wanted to mention, if you can see that there's a broad coalition of people that are interested in this, if you look at who's requesting this, including United Seniors, obviously, the Pharmacists Association, and so on. I wanted to mention we had a greenback on this bill, and Jim did some really good work and went around and signed up quite a number of people. And we had a drafting error, so at the last minute we ended up having just Senator Trowe's name on it. But there are actually 10 senators that agreed to co-sponsor on this, including Senator Fisher and Senator Shields, and from both aisles, Republican and Democrat. And there were 18 representatives, and I just wanted his work on that not to go to completely waste, and for you to know that there are some people out there that really are interested in this. So. That is all the time I'll take.
Okay. Thank you very much. We'll go to Mike Canton, Lane County Sacred Heart Medical Center, and Rita Van Doren from the OSU College of Pharmacy. It's not often we get someone in uniform.
For a fact, I literally left the hospital to get here.
Well, we appreciate you coming.
My pleasure. We sat?
Right.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Fisher, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mike Canton. I'm clinical pharmacy manager at Sacred Heart Medical Center in Eugene and president of the board of directors of the Oregon Medication Education Program. And I'm here today to speak in support of Senate Concurrent Resolution 8. 2 to 3 times a month, I have the opportunity to speak to a group of 12 to 20 individuals who are going through cardiac or respiratory rehabilitation. They've been referred to rehab programs due to serious illnesses or major surgery. My role is to offer them training on the use of their medications. I can tell you from experience that people are desperate to get proper information regarding their medications. They feel too rushed in the doctor's office or in the pharmacy to adequately discuss what they're taking, why they're taking it, how long they should take it, what it does to help them, what it might do to harm them, and how it might interact with other medications or foods they're taking, or whether there's an alternative they can more easily afford. For instance, the metered dose inhaler I'm holding in my hands is one of the most important medications patients can take who have asthma. But this medication, if to be taken properly, requires 8 steps to be done in perfect sequence and with no mistakes, or else the dose is completely ineffective. Besides that, this costs about $50 to the patient. That means if the patient's paying their own money, this money has been thrown away. If the patient's insurance company is paying it, it's been thrown away. Or the state of Oregon is paying for this inhaler, it's been thrown away because the patient has been properly instructed. It's a process that takes about 15 to 20 minutes to first go through the steps, demonstrate it for the patient, and then have the patient demonstrate it back to be certain that they're corrected and using it properly. And it has to be reinforced periodically as patients sometimes get a little lax. This is just one of many examples of medications that have to be accompanied with proper instruction in order to be sure that the patient's getting the most out of it. And as Jim had mentioned, drug interactions, not only with prescription drugs, but with over-the-counter drugs and herbals, are a huge problem, which no one health professional can put together, because seldom do we see everything a patient is taking. The program that we sponsor, the Oregon Medication Education Program, brings together volunteer pharmacists, nurses, and physicians to look at everything a patient takes in a setting that's comfortable for the patient, such as a church or a senior center, so that we can sort everything out and see what's going on. And I can tell you from experience, these are invaluable sessions, because it gives the patient useful information. It empowers them to know why they're taking certain things. It helps us to sort out things they don't have to take at all. And it oftentimes results in at least one important intervention we're going to make before that patient leaves the 30-minute session that will change their medication profile and perhaps prevent an adverse drug event. I wish to thank the committee for taking valuable time to consider this resolution. While its passage won't ensure proper medication education for all Oregonians, it will send a message to the regulatory agencies, the providers, and payers that the provision of medication must be accompanied by effective education. And I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you.
I just found out this morning I was coming. So I have participated in one of the education programs with Mike, the group, just last week. What I found that is very valuable, like you said, the people like to bring all their medications, ask you questions, have time to talk, sometimes an hour, about their medication. The one helpful thing I found is they bring not only their prescription meds, but their OTCs and their herbals, which is something that pharmacies and doctors don't always know, because sometimes we don't ask. And there are several interactions between all three of those groups of medications. So I find it very helpful.
Could I have you give your name for
Oh, I'm sorry. My name's Rita Van Dorn. I'm an OSU College of Pharmacy student.
Thank you. Okay, appreciate you coming today. I'm not sure how to pronounce the doctor's name here.
It's Dr. Vermignon.
Pardon?
That's Dr. Vermignon.
Vermignon, okay. And Verna Van Dienhoven, I believe, RN. Go ahead, Doctor.
I'd like to thank you, first of all, for giving me this opportunity to testify in favor of SCR8. I would like you to bear with my English, because my first language is French, so I'm struggling with English.
You've already born with my French, so.
Medication mismanagement and subsequent adverse outcome.
Doctor, can you give your name for the record, please, for we.
My name is Dr. Yves Vimignon. I'm a physician, and I have a master in public health, and I represent the Oregon Medication Education Program. Medication mismanagement and the subsequent adverse outcomes are becoming a serious public health problem. And I'm here this afternoon to convey a few information that can shed some light on the significance of the problem. Indeed, estimates have shown that about 50% of medications prescribed are incorrectly taken in the U.S. And there are many articles in 1982, 1988, 89, and 90 that have pointed the same statistic, the same numbers. And 17% of all hospital admissions, 25% of therapeutic failures, and 2.5 million medical emergencies are due every year to incorrect use of medication. Those numbers are staggering. A mathematical model has been used in 1990 to estimate how much this is costing. And they found out that this is costing the United States about $76.6 billion of dollars. This is a cost related to drug-related morbidity and mortality issues. This problem is, those figures are national figures, but Oregon is not spared because during the Oregon Medication Education Program and our two-year pilot project, we have found evidence that show that this is a big problem in Oregon too. And the Oregon Medical Association formally endorsed our project on January 11. This is a project we have been doing with pharmacists in communities. We involve pharmacy students through the School of Pharmacy, and the dean of the school is very supportive of the program. So he helped us get students to come and help register pharmacists to deliver the program in the different communities where we are going to. And we are trying to make this program now a statewide program involving probably medical students also and residents, medical residents, so this program can become a program being done at a local level, statewide. So we believe that the patient education on proper medication management is becoming a crucial need, not only in helping those patients understand how to use properly their medication, but also to empower them to adopt and maintain safe medication taking behavior. There are many public health professionals and leading medical researchers or medical academics that are increasingly recognizing that rational use of drug is vital, not only for therapeutic outcomes, but also for cost containment. Statistics have shown that a successful provision of pharmaceutical care could save up to 120,000 lives and $45.6 billion every year. So, if nothing is done in Oregon, there will be always a steadfast increase of the financial and life cost attributable to incorrect use of medication. So, we hope the community will be in support of this resolution so we can make this program an established program statewide. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Go ahead, Matt.
I'm Verna Van Dienhoven. I'm a registered nurse, and I'm here to ask you and thank you for the opportunity to support SCR8. I'm a registered nurse, a member of the Oregon Nurses Association and the American Nurses Association. I have seen the damage of the incorrect use of medication that has included long hospital stays that are very expensive and even death, premature death of many of our seniors. As Dr. V. Mignon told you earlier, 17% of the hospital admissions in 1990 were due to incorrect medication uses. We know that that number has increased over the last 10 years and will continue to escalate if we do not intervene. The Oregon Medication Education Program is supported by a wide range of not only medical professionals, but also the many senior programs across our state. I urge your support of this resolution as the beginning step to reduce hospital admissions in Oregon due to incorrect medication.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you folks coming. That is the conclusion of testimony on SCR8. I'm going to close the public hearing and open a work session on SCR8. I would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman.
George.
As a person who has experienced some a mistake in a pharmaceutical that right now would not allow me to give blood, and a medication that I was shocked to find out kills 1 in 10,000 with the first dose, I would be glad to recommend that SCR8 go to the floor with a due pass. Oh, what?
Adopt.
Excuse me. That's right. We will learn this eventually.
Senator George has moved that we adopt SCR8 and send it to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Opposition? Hearing none, so ordered. Oh, wait, I'll just ask the clerk to call the roll. Thinking about amendment here, and you get an adopted thing.
Senator Messerschmidt?
Aye.
Senator Shields?
Aye.
Senator George?
Aye.
Chair Fisher?
Aye. Is Senator Carter in the hall.
Yep. Here she comes.
Good. Senator Carter, how do you vote on SCR 8?
Aye.
Good. It is carried. We have a carrier.
I will.
Oh, okay.
Okay, Senator Carter will carry the bill. It's passed our committee. The resolution is passed our committee. Close public work session on SCR 8 and open a public hearing on SB 9. And Senator Messerly wishes to introduce this. Go right ahead, Senator.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and committee. I'm Ken Messerly from Senate District 24, which runs from Florence to California border on the Oregon coast. I've been asked by President Durfler to present this bill to the committee. I'm one of the several co-signers on the bill. This bill is important to me in my district because, as I stated in an earlier bill, we have a very high percentage of retired people, and we also have a very depressed economy. So, programs such as we've heard today, and I think especially this bill, have a tremendous amount of meaning to me and to my district. This bill establishes the Patient Prescription Drug Assistance Program. This program is based on a similar program in Rhode Island. The program will help gain access to free medication for low-income individuals who do not have health insurance or publicly funded prescription drug benefits. Basically, it's for those patients and constituents who fall through the cracks and simply aren't covered by anyone else. This program would be managed as presented in this bill and based at the OSU's College of Pharmacy and operated through a toll-free hotline and internet website. So they would be the coordinators, basically, of this program. Qualified individuals are matched to existing free or heavily discounted medication programs operated through the pharmaceutical drug companies. The drug companies have various guidelines within their respective programs, such as the amount of medication delivered at one time and how often a participant has to reapply. All drug company programs require participants to have their physician sign the assistance form and for the medication to be delivered to the physician's office through the doctor's office. I just saw today a fiscal on this of $500,000, so compared to Senate Bill 927, this is a bargain. And I want to point out that there are no mandates to the industry and there's no mandates to the service providers. I asked staff if with even the $500,000 fiscal, why we couldn't educate the doctors themselves and just have an education program for the doctors and let them handle it in that manner. The answer to that is that you need a pharmacist to approve the drugs. And that's why we have to go through the OSU or could be another source, but OSU is the one recommended here. There'll be others testifying today who have more technical knowledge than I do, but I think it's really a step in the right direction and might be solving part of the problems that I'm sure we're all hearing, and not just in my district. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator Messerly. Appreciate that. I want to enter a couple of letters here into the record. The Oregon Health Resources Commission has sent a letter in support, and it's signed by their chair, the vice chair, and six members of the board, and also by Kathleen Weaver, staff for the Health Resources Commission, medical director. And we have one from Senator Bev Clarno, and she's also entered a bill in lieu of verbal testimony and support. Senator Shields.
I actually had a question for Senator Messerly. Earlier today, there were representatives of two or three pharmaceutical companies sitting in the crowd. I don't see any of them now. They seem to have escaped. But have you, I mean, I'm, as I, over the years that I've been in human services, I've I've ended up with some of them coming to me and talking to me individually and saying, hey, you, we've got this program, and they'd tell me about it personally and say, you know, tell people in your congregation to use it, you know. So it seems to be kind of a secret. I mean, you know, it's not as well known. So what's the reaction of pharmaceutical representatives that you've talked to as you've run into them? Or have they been in conversation with you?
They have not been in conversation. I do have, excuse me, Senator Fisher and committee, I do have in my data that there are over 50 companies who do have programs such as this. Now, they all have their individual programs, so it's not a universal type program, but the amount, the time that they require for their specific programs is different, but over 50 companies have programs. So it is a educational situation. I really do believe that, and we simply seem to get it up on the radar screen.
Senator Carter. Can I just want to respond to Senator Shields? I think you spell it D-E-R-F-L-E-R. That's why they are gone.
Well, I don't know the schedule around here. But the one follow-up question I have is, obviously, since I haven't talked to you, you wouldn't probably have an answer, but it would seem to me that your bill could create an opportunity to kind of maybe systematize or ask these people, you know, to systematize in some way what they're doing so that there's more or less one approachable program instead of 50 different programs floating around out there. Is that your idea?
No, I think, as I understand this bill as it's been drafted, that it would be individual, but it would be promoted through the OSU Extension. Okay. They could access this in two ways, through an 800 number and through the email, through the Internet. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator. Appreciate that. We have Wayne Cragin from OSU and Jim Davis, Oregon State Council of Senior Citizens.
Mr. Chairman, just a transfer conversation. Senator Shields, I was doing tongue-in-cheek. In that nobody's going to testify against the president's bill.
Well, I wasn't asking him to testify against it. I was asking him to be in here and be a resource for it.
Oh, no, they got to scatter.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Senator Fisher and members of the committee, my name is Wayne Cragin. I'm the Dean of the College of Pharmacy at Oregon State University College of Pharmacy. I have brought along some handouts, but much of what I have in my handout has been testified through the various bills that we've heard about this morning, so I'll try and cut a little bit of that front in short, but I'm here to speak in favor of Senate Bill 9. It's very much complementary to Senate Bill 927 and to the resolution to the Bill number 8. This is not to duplicate either of those efforts, but the activities will be very much complementary in helping each of those be more successful. In terms of why this legislation is necessary, I think we've heard from several today that high cost of medications is often a barrier to people getting their proper therapy. And if they don't get their therapy, they end up in emergency rooms, hospitalized, they don't take care of themselves, and ultimately costs considerably more money than if they had received their medications. And there are drug companies, as we've also heard testified already today, that numerous drug companies make available low-cost or no-cost drugs to certain individuals. And I want to add that this is not just for senior citizens, but for any people who meet certain criteria, eligibility criteria for low income. And in fact, in Rhode Island, over 70% of the people that come to this program are not senior citizens. They're people in the ages of 45 to 60. And people with children, et cetera, that also qualify for these programs. And how does the program work? This is a service that would be advertised to health professionals, physicians, pharmacists, as well as to patients through professional meetings, health fairs, newspapers, radio advertising, et cetera, to make people aware. Again, these programs are available, but quite frankly, people just aren't aware that they're available and aren't accessing them. The initial contact is generally made by the patient, but it could be by the pharmacist, the physician calling the 800 number or the internet, coming in through the internet. There's a preliminary screening that goes on for eligibility in regard to financial need. If the person meets some of these initial screening, then a history form that collects information about the person's illnesses, the medications they're receiving, their insurance status, et cetera, is sent out to the person and sent back to the screening service. And there's a thorough review that may determine that the person is eligible for these free drugs, but may also determine they're not eligible. But here's where the pharmacist comes in, that there may be alternative treatments that might be available at lower cost, ways to make their medication regimen simpler, et cetera. And then a letter is sent to the patient, but inside of that is a letter to their physician to take to their physician that describes what's available, what the alternatives are for them, essentially a consult note that goes to those individuals, and then they need to act upon it. This service does not actually provide the drugs. It provides the information to the providers and to patients to help them access the system. We heard a little bit about the financial impact, $500,000 in the biennium, $250,000 per year. What is this? Why is this cost? We would hire one FTE pharmacist, 1 to 2 clerical staff. This is based upon the needs at the Rhode Island program. Pharmacy students would be there at all times to offer their assistance. There's computers, faxes, database management. There's office space that would be required, 800 toll-free line, web pages, advertising, postage, et cetera. All of these things add up. The payback will be decreased cost to somebody. May not be necessarily directly to the state, but it might be. I want to add one final kind of proviso to this, that this is a service mission by the College of Pharmacy. However, we are under attack financially ourselves, and this would then any funds provided are not intended to reduce or supplant the general funds appropriations or other financial support for the Oregon State University College of Pharmacy. In conclusion, I request passage of Senate Bill 9 with adequate funding to allow uninsured Oregon's access to medication which they otherwise could not afford.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jim Davis.
You're getting
a
workout today, Jim.
Yeah, really, hopping up and down. Representing the Oregon State Council of Senior Citizens, United Seniors of Oregon, and the Great Panthers, I want to express our strong support for SB 9. As a matter of fact, it falls in line with some of the program recommendations the Oregon State Council has been recently pursuing around senior drug intake. This bill would allow low-income seniors to access free or discounted programs through pharmaceutical companies, and we'd like to see a more coordinated system available so seniors consumers, not just seniors, know what programs are out there and what their availability is and the qualifications that they might need to take part in those programs. It's also an excellent vehicle for information distribution, again, around availability of these programs and also potentially around medication management. It's very interesting, and we particularly zeroed in on D, in 2D, which is the establishment of the toll-free hotline and the internet website, because in the proposal we just finished around the Oregon Senior Drug Education Program, one of our strong recommendations was going to be the establishment of an 800 number through the OSU School of Pharmacy. As a matter of fact, we were going to meet with you to talk about this. And essentially what we were looking at would be to set up a toll-free line that seniors and other consumers could call into and ask information about drug programs, about medication management problems, about drugs that they were taking and the difficulties that they were experiencing. And we were talking about having potentially pharmaceutical students staffing that, and the positive impact that would have on the senior community to be able to have an 800 number to call like that. And of course, the internet website, only about 25% of seniors right now are hooked up to the web, but still, for those that are, that would be an excellent vehicle as well. So this just falls right in line to the type of programs that we're trying to establish in the senior community, and we would strongly support this effort.
Thank you. Senator Shields.
Of the 25% that are hooked up to the web, how many do you think would fall under the qualifications?
Probably those hooked up to the web probably are of a bit of a higher income level, so probably not as many as you'd think.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Crawford.
But there are opportunities in communities. I know because at my organization, we have, our seniors have access to computers on our website. So I think that you're finding more community-based organizations having computer clubs for seniors, and which is bringing, you know, the world closer to them. So for those that don't have it personally in their homes, they certainly have community-based organizations that are very close to them.
Well, and Ms. Chair, Senator Carter, in terms of lower-income consumers as well as seniors, the use of computers and the web is increasing by leaps and bounds. Mm-hmm. And computers are becoming cheaper and more accessible, as you're saying, through the Urban League and others, other organizations. They'd be able to access these. So, yeah, the internet site is a great idea. We're probably a little more interested in the 800 number for the senior population to be able to call into, because it probably most everybody has a telephone.
Yes.
Is there any way to project, maybe based on the Rhode Island model, savings or what this kind of amounts to in terms of savings to the state, to individuals that we're going to range?
Senator Fisher, may I respond to the? I can give you an example. This is somewhat tangential, but one of the at Oregon Health Sciences University, which now provides a similar service to their to the people who come to that organization for people who have free and indigent care. They're spending about $200,000 a year to run their program, and they're figuring they're getting about $400,000 in payback to them and free drug that they're getting reimbursed back for. So, you know, for them, it's a cost-effective. Obviously, it's not; they're not in the business of providing this type of service outside their own walls. So, in some ways, there's somebody giving away, either giving away free drug that now would be reimbursed, but not directly to those individuals, unfortunately, or people are just not getting those prescriptions, and it's costing us other expenses through emergency rooms, et cetera. But I don't have a dollar figure for you.
If I may, just very quickly, Mr. Chair, just respond to that. What's interesting about that is when you increase access to the drugs seniors and other consumers need, it does have an impact on other aspects of a health budget, because once they're taking the drugs they need, as we discussed in some of the other times I've been at the podium earlier today, is the fact that you see a decrease in hospitalizations, emergency room visits, physician visitations, et cetera. And if you expanded this idea to include medication management information being provided on this 800 number and on the internet, it would have a fiscal impact. Again, I don't have that information either. I'd like to see better tracking of that, even done by the Oregon Health Plan, because I think you would see when access is increased and medication management is increased, there is a definite cost savings.
Before we close down this afternoon, I wanted to thank Dr. Krajan for his guidance at the School of Pharmacy. I was a very good friend of Dr. Robert Sager, one of your predecessors.
Yes.
And have very high regard for the school and its work down there. And if we could do something like this and involve the school in that, it would be, a feather in our cap to be able to do that and provide extra help. And might also be a means of some experience for some of the students there, too, while they're going through, to be able to probably do some counseling along with being involved with this, too. So keep up the good work. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Senator Fisher. I agree. This will be an excellent learning experience for our students.
Mr. Chairman, I just want Senator Fields to hear this also. I'm going to thank Dr. Krajan for the numbers of minority students that are coming into the pharmaceutical program. I think it's a progressive program, and it means that you're reaching out. So kudos.
Thank you again.
I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 9, and nothing further to come before the committee. Thank everyone for sticking around and bearing with us today, and I'll